Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Tennis Weekly with Joel, Kim and Chris. On today's French Open preview, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com.
Djokovic lands in the same half as Alcaraz.
Rybakina draws potential semi with Swiatek.
And we announce our collector set French Open player picks.
Chris, today is the 25th of May and we are here to catch up on the French Open draws at Tennis Weekly HQ. Roland Garros is here. The draws were made today. Very, very exciting. Collector set is back as well at Tennis Weekly. And I'm always excited because it's an episode I can give my quarter by quarter predictions, which are usually terrible, but it's still just fun, I think, just sort of looking at a complete draw at the very beginning, having so many hopes and ambitions and feeling like a know-it-all, and then 2 days later, it's your world's turned right upside down.
I mean, draws are there to be broken, and so are all of our predictions. The good thing, Joel, about when we have collector set is that we are able to do our quarter by quarter predictions, and then I can do something completely different for collector set. So I can hedge my bets of the hope at some point I'll get one pick that no one else will get, or 1 point. So I think I'm playing for not to be bageled or not to take a trip to the bakery here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to unveil, or we're going to be unveiling, our collector set player nominations later in the episode. We're, of course, going to be doing the French Open analysis quarter by quarter for the men's draws as well as the ladies' draws. But before we get into that, Chris, the draw took place today, and I know you love live streaming a Grand Slam draw. Now, I feel like the topic of live streaming draws, they have been borderline shambolic, I feel, at other Grand Slam tournaments. How did, for you, the French Open draw, how did it stack up?
I'll tell you what, it's a lovely looking room. It's very, very nice. There's a big stage. Both the trophies are there. Amélie Mauresmo pops in, you know. I think it's all very, a lot of ceremony. I think the US Open don't even live stream it now.
They just do a reveal. It's like, surprise, here it is.
That's a bit of an odd one, but this one, they have all sorts of ceremony and they always invite a random French athlete to come and do the draw. And I remember last time I was saying that it was a biathlete, which is quite surprising, called Quentin Fillon-Mallet, which I was not expecting.
Maybe everyone else was busy.
Maybe, but this time they've upped the budget. I think clearly there's been some investment because we had the French rugby captain, Antoine Dupont, was there, which...
He's a very good rugby player. I do like my rugby, and he lit up the Six Nations this year. So, he's definitely a bit of star
also,
power.
Yeah. Well, he lit up the draw ceremony as well because...
Sounds like he lit up for Iga Świątek.
It does. Well, I mean, I think it definitely put her in a spot to bother because maybe sporting worlds shouldn't always unite, because she was asked, do you watch rugby sometimes? And Iga said that after this, she will for sure. But she still congratulated him on everything he'd done, because she knew that he had done some things. She found out about him before the ceremony in the briefing. But hey, you know, Iga's busy. She's playing tennis. She's the world number one.
It was a good draw. It went off without any hitches, I would say, and nice to get a little bit of star power there. Let's look at the men's draw, starting in the top quarter. Carlos Alcaraz is the world number one. He is the top seed. What do you make of his quarter? What do you make, I feel, after losing to Marizan? I was calling it like upset of the century so
millennium.
Far. Yeah, are you how high are you on Carlos Alcaraz at the moment? Was that just a blip, or is there a little bit more cause for concern now you've seen the draw?
I'm not too concerned in the draw. I think it's not a bad draw. I think he will be able to play himself back into form. Tsitsipas is a very dangerous quarterfinal opponent. I think it's been quite a while since he's been the fifth seed at a slam. And obviously he made the final of the Australian Open, so he showed this year he's got Grand Slam form. So that definitely poses a challenge. But when we look back at this compared to last year's French Open draw, where I was completely outraged that we had Nadal and Djokovic were in the same quarter, I believe. And that caused absolute chaos in terms of interest. And I have to say, in terms of if you could have picked an exciting quarter, it would be Tsitsipas, Alcaraz, or a Djokovic Tsitsipas. So I think what's good is that we have got the interest there, but it's not so much that we will lose interest if one of those goes out early.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big talking points about the draw was where Novak Djokovic was going to land, which we're going to get on to, because he did land in Carlos Alcaraz's half. So that could potentially be a semi-final to come. But as you said, Tsitsipas is also going to be, you know, a real challenge potentially for
it's a
Alcaraz.
Tough top half.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, on Tsitsipas, in the news this week, Mark Philippoussis, who has been, you know, his coach over the last few seasons, announced kind of a shock split, has been removed, you know, from the setup. What do you kind of make of that? Is that surprising going into the French Open? Is that going to concentrate Tsitsipas even more, or do you think that's like a little bit of a worry sign maybe going into Roland Garros?
I think it clearly is a case that outside influence is probably quite positive when it comes to Tsitsipas. So I would be slightly concerned if there isn't that outside influence in the same way without Philippoussis in your camp.
I thought he was a calming influence on him versus his family, which we've seen in the last week or so.
And having someone who's been there and done that, I think, is probably someone who they will listen to in those situations as well. So I think it can go one of two ways. Obviously, Sasha Zverev did actually part ways with his coach and was being coached pretty much by his family, his brother playing a role as well. And he reached the French Open semifinals last year, playing some of the best tennis we've ever seen him play. So sometimes it can be easier in terms of the dynamic if there is tension there and it is being caused by two different opinions, but it's definitely not the ideal pathway that he's had going into the French in terms of his form, in terms of the stability of his camp, and in terms of some of the question marks that there are around whether he'll be able to play his best tennis here.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I do wonder, without maybe that calming influence and it's just going to be full on family, that has definitely boiled over, and we're going into an even more intense environment in terms of a Grand Slam that Tsitsipas expects to do well in. So I'm interested to see how that kind of plays out and develops.
How many members of his family do you think he's going to ask to leave stadiums during the tournament?
Well, I was thinking he's probably going to give his mum Mark Philippoussis's seat.
I mean, she could get an upgrade, you know, maybe Petros Tsitsipas, maybe he's going to be head coach.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, other players in this quarter, we've got Britain's Cam Norrie, we've got Felix Auger-Aliassime. I noticed Felix Auger-Aliassime, I think, pulled out today of Lyon. I think that was more precautionary. However, I don't think he's had a particularly great clay season. He's got Fabio Fognini in the first round. I've got that on upset alert for me personally. I've not seen as much of FAA as I would have liked to. And what I saw of Fognini against Andy Murray, if there's a crowd and, you know, they are vocal, I always feel like Fognini is up for it.
He is, and he said this week that he still knows on his day he can beat anybody, which I think is an interesting statement based on the form he showed in the last
year.
That is very
true.
I mean, he did beat Andy Murray, but I mean, he's 36 now, Fognini, so I think it is a bit of a case where on a day he can beat someone, on the next day he might lose to anybody else. So it's the perfect matchup for him, because I think he does sometimes need a little bit of a name to get himself motivated. And if you're kind of Felix, I think he probably was playing Lyon thinking, I've got to get a win on clay before I come into the
Absolutely.
French. That was his first win on clay this season.
What's going on? What is going on there? I mean, both the Canadian players, let's be honest, because they're both in this quarter. Denis Shapovalov's the 26th seed. I'm actually amazed he's seeded at all, given, you know, what we've seen of him this season. But it does feel like the Canadians are on a little bit of a downslope at the moment, given not long ago what they won the ATP Cup with Shapovalov and FAA.
Yeah, they were playing fantastic tennis, and combined they've had two wins on clay in the clay court season, which is, I mean, very surprising given the level of talent. You have to think maybe he hasn't been fully fit, because he has been playing really well on other surfaces, but it is definitely Felix's worst surface. He is very much at home on an indoor court, and a hard court and a slow clay court like we've seen in some of these events. It's no real surprise that he hasn't been able to put together the best results. But in Madrid, with a serve like his, you'd expect him to at least win a couple of rounds. And I do think upset alert, Joel. I hate to agree with you, but I do think that one, if it's not an upset, it's going five.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, where else are you just quickly looking at in this quarter? I'd say Cam Norrie is there. He's got Benoit Paire in the first round. I think Cam Norrie could do quite well in this tournament. He's going well this week. I'm slightly worried, though. Alexander Shevchenko, I think he's had some very decent results, even in losses. Over the clay this season. I remember watching his match against a Medvedev a few weeks ago where he pushed him to three, lost 7-5 in the third. I think he could be a little bit dangerous. I'm excited to watch Mikhail Imer as well against Lorenzo Musetti, given Imer got defaulted this week. So I haven't necessarily got him on upset alert. I've got him on anger management alert.
Was the ball in or out, though? That is the question we were talking about. Not whether he destroyed the umpire's chair.
The umpire
chair.
Should have got up from his seat, let's be honest. I know, like, Imer... I mean, to me, Imer is not a player known for his outbursts like that. He was very kind of... I think for me, looking at it on TV, it was like very in the moment. It was very cool afterwards. He accepted the default and just wanted to get out of the situation. But I do agree. I think... the umpire in the first place should have got up and checked it because it was a very close call on a very big point.
It was a close call on a big point. I do think his behaviour was beyond unacceptable. Mm. It was very reminiscent of, was it in Monterey last year with, or no, not last year, a while ago with Alexander Zverev. Yeah. And if you had to see what the punishment is, because there wasn't a very significant one. And I think if you and are kind of attacking the umpire's chair, I mean, you need to really think about what it was that set that off, because that was one point.
Hey, I mean, if they're giving €133,000 fine to Hugo Gaston for dropping a ball on the tennis court, I'm interested to see how that could potentially go for Imer.
I mean, he's made a loss this year with that fine before it was reduced.
Was that too much, do you think? Or were you like, I can understand that?
I remember watching it happen and I thought, the audacity. When it happened, it just felt so sneaky. Like, it would never cross my mind to throw a ball on court and pretend it fell out and you have to play a lep. But it's definitely in poor taste. It must happen on the Challenger Tour and in lots of tournaments all the time. It obviously was an intention to try and, like, wangle a lep, which is obviously cheating. But, I mean, we've seen people abuse umpires, as we've talked about. We've seen Zverev basically attack an umpire in his chair and he didn't get a fine this big. So I'm not sure why they're making an example of him. And I do just think it's this odd thing where when you have status, you do seem to get away with more, because Kyrgios has got away with a lot. Like, he spat on a fan at Wimbledon.
Yeah.
It's really...
chucked some chairs really on the court.
Yeah, and this was obviously like something that was very stupid, but slightly calculated in the sense that he didn't even obviously realise this would be replayed so much on Twitter and this would be caught on, but the punishment doesn't fit the crime. And if this is the worst fine for a defence in tennis history, then I think tennis must be completely free of any sort of bad behaviour.
I fully expect him now to sort of be in a room thinking about, okay, chucking a ball on the court, that's out of the picture now to get a let. What are the other ways I can achieve that?
Because the cap is a good one. Andy Murray's cap blowing off.
I was thinking about getting some braids in the hair with Venus Williams when the braids fell out. Yeah, so I'd be growing my hair long.
That was a good one.
I'd be growing my hair long and get some braids in.
Or you could do maybe a violation of the Wimbledon dress code midpoint.
Yes.
You know, what if you hit a serve and your top rode up and you've got a violation of colour underneath. There's all sorts of things you could go for. You can get really inventive, Joel.
Yeah, you can. Well, we'll see how that develops. But I mean, moving on to the second quarter, as I said, we had Carlos Alcaraz wonder about if Novak Djokovic was going to fall in his half, and he has done. Novak Djokovic headlines the second quarter. We've got Andrei Rublev in there, Dan Evans, Hubert Hurkacz, Karen Khachanov, who's been a very solid performer, you know, in the Grand Slams of late. Again, question to you around Djokovic. He's not had the greatest It's been a bit of a bumpy clay season so far. There's been a few injury niggles. He hasn't won a title since, Australian Open Grand Slam at the start of the year. Yes, he wasn't allowed into, you know, the United States for the Sunshine Double. But how do you see this going for Novak Djokovic? Do you think he will be worried about the form that he has shown going up to this event, regardless of, you know, his level when it comes to Grand Slams?
I don't think we can ever really be too concerned for Djokovic, because I think the way that he's able to play himself into form and actually manage injuries throughout a tournament is almost like unprecedented. We saw in Australia, there were niggles. We've seen in many different situations that he's been in trouble and he's been able to pull through and then use the rest day to kind of almost reboot the system. I think he will be losing some sets to some... I mean, I saw the draw and I immediately thought that first round, maybe a set's going to go, because he does quite like, you know, to lose a few sets
Jack
early
Draper
on.
Jack Draper at Wimbledon, he does like a drop in the first set of a tournament, doesn't he? Of a Grand Slam.
Jack Draper, we had... he dropped a set against a relatively unknown French player, Enzo... was it Coucourt? Mm-hmm. At the Australian, yeah. And then didn't lose another set throughout, so... I think we'll have a little wobble. I think he's had a bit of time off. And I actually think that Holger match was more positive for Djokovic than Holger, because he really didn't play his best tennis. And he's still very competitive with someone who many people think is probably the third favourite for the title.
I do, yeah. And I think it's quite interesting. The nearest seed to him is Davidovich Fokina. I find that interesting because he is a player who... You know, again, I almost have to take, I think, tournament by tournament, because sometimes he shows flashes of brilliance.
Tiebreak by tiebreak, final set tiebreak by final
exactly.
set tiebreak.
But sometimes, yeah, he's just completely off the boil, but sometimes he is on it and he can just pull, you know, match after match together in a clay tournament specifically. Yeah, so I'm curious to see how that goes. I mean, he's got Arthur Fee from France in the first round. I don't think that's a gimme at all. I think Fee's made three...
We'll see that on Chatrier, sure, in the scheduling.
I think that's going to be an interesting one. I mean, I could even have ADF on upset alert there, because I think Fee's been in three ATP Tour semi-finals this year. I think he's in one at the moment in Lyon. He, I think, won against an Emer when that default happened. So that could be quite interesting. I mean, on the other side, you've got Khachanov.
He's well-rested, Joel, I would say, quickly, because he actually had that walkover, didn't have to finish a set, and then Felix pulled out. So he's had two walkovers. So he is fresh as a daisy for the Nakashima match tomorrow. So going into the French, even though he has been playing this week, he might not have as much confidence under your belt as you think he would for reaching a semi-final.
Yeah, we'll wait and see on that. I mean, just on the other side, as I say, we've got Khachanov and Rublev. Do you see, like, either of those players or anyone else in that part of the draw being a potential thorn in the side of Novak Djokovic? I mean, Andrei Rublev, Monte Carlo champion, lest we forget.
I mean, that is a great point. I think something that made it very difficult when we're looking at this draw from a predictions perspective was around Rublev and Khachanov, because they've split results on the clay this year, and they split very similar scorelines with, in Monte Carlo, obviously Rublev won that title. He came through 7-6, 6-2 in the round of 16. And then in Madrid, Khachanov came through 7-6, 6-4. Probably the serve might have been the thing that brought him through that. But that one is a hard one to call, because when it comes to majors, Khachanov has shown that he does have the better form. So the question would be, and I'm not sure he quite has yet, can Rublev build on that Masters breakthrough victory by putting something together and going beyond the quarterfinal and into the very latter stages of a slam? And I'm not sure he will, because I think there are a couple of players in here, such as Khachanov and also Djokovic, who I think their experience at the later stages of slams will really get them through that.
I mean, moving on to the bottom half of the draw, and we're going to get on to quarter three. Chris, I know you're looking forward to this, because this quarter, you might as well just call it the Battle of the Nordics, because we've got Holger Rune, Casper Ruud headlining this quarter. Rune's got Eubanks from America in the first round. I mean, Ruud's got a very nice, comfortable route into Roland Garros. He's surrounded by qualifiers and lucky losers. Do you see this quarter as the Battle of the Nordics, or do you think someone else is going to come out of nowhere and just kind of put that story to bed?
I think it's an interesting rivalry that's developing. I think it does make for quite a lot of interest. I think it's very exciting because we've seen that they had a great contest, especially that first set in Rome in the semifinals. Yeah. They're both starting to perform together. So I think it would be great to see that again. We did see it at the French Open where there was all of that drama.
Changing room drama. Is there going to be more?
And it's very un-Scandinavian, like, I have to say. Like, I don't encounter this level of drama on a daily basis in my life here in Copenhagen. So I think it will be interesting to see what happens. I do think that Casper probably will kind of put some form together here. Mm. I can't see past Holger, though. I really can't see past Holger, though, for this section.
Just on Rune, what do you make of the fact that he could play Sebastian Baez in the second round, which... I think that's quite a tricky early test, I think, if you're in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tricky one. Obviously, Norrie took him out today quite handily in that final set, 6-1. He's a clay court specialist. His whole game is to make it difficult for you. But if you do have the firepower like Holger does, you will be able to get past him. He doesn't have those regular upsets of like the big players in the same way that like a Cerundolo does, where he has those moments where... he's able to kind of go above the top 30 and really get the results. So I don't see any particular problems in this section of the draw for him. I do have my eye on a particular tie between Lehechka and Struff. Mm. I think Kim and yourself, I think you're backing Struff for this one, but I do think Lehechka is a very, very talented younger player. And that would be, if I was there and I had a grand pass, that's what I'd be watching.
Yeah, that's definitely a very interesting tie. I think Struff is certainly one of the players in this quarter that could do well, I think. You know, I could easily see him. I know Casper Ruud could put some form together, but if Struff and Ruud meet, who's to say Struff might not go on a journey himself? I mean,
the Americans.
Yeah.
There's a pair of Americans
Taylor
in here.
Fritz,
Taylor Fritz. He's had a bit of a mixed bag season when it comes to the clay. Some solid results, but obviously not his best surface.
Cerundolo
again, that could definitely be a good result. I think it is a tricky little section. And I can see that this probably will have a few of the mid seeds. I can see them not making it through. I think there will be some opportunities here for some of the players who really are specialists on clay to make an impact.
Yeah, certainly. And I think if you look at quarter four, I think it's a similar story. I mean, we've got Daniil Medvedev, what feels like now the master of clay courts. Daniil Medvedev.
I forgot he had a first name. I thought it was just Klavedev.
Well, he's right at the bottom of the draw, has got a qualifier or a lucky loser in the first round. I mean, his draw looks quite nice on paper. Yes, Borna Coric could be a fly in the ointment there, I think. And there's Tiafoe Zverev, but you've got Sinner at the top of this quarter. Do you think Medvedev and Sinner are just on a path to make up the quarterfinals, or what do you think now with this sort of new mantle that's been bestowed on Klavedev, as you said?
Well, I think he really seems to have knuckled down, and although every bounce is a bad bounce, he seems to be handling the bad bounces better than ever before. And none of us thought he'd make a quarterfinal here, and I made the Sharapova comparison last time, and I do think, I genuinely cannot believe I'm saying this, but I would not be gobsmacked if Daniil Medvedev won the French Open.
No, really?
Which is something I never thought. I'm not saying I'm predicting it, but what I can see that being a situation where he might. And he's put together some results that make you think, hang on a minute, this is something that could be realistic. I don't think he will, personally. But in this section, I don't think anyone has the consistency or the firepower to hit him off the court. And I think Sinner and him are definitely my favourite to make it through. I think Ruusuvuori could be an interesting early encounter for Sinner. That could be a little bit of a challenge. But Joel, in the battle of the, what I call the mop-headed giants of the tour, and your favourite male player, Lloyd Harris, he's back in a Grand Slam draw and he's playing Zverev. Will that be tricky?
Is he still got the long locks? I think that's the most important question.
He's got a good head of hair. Does that affect your judgment?
But I mean, Zverev, it's weird that we're not really talking about Zverev. You know, he's still, you know, he's 22nd seed here. It's not been quite there for him. What sort of ambitions do you think Zverev will have going into this French Open? I mean, we've got to remember last year he had that awful injury against Nadal in the semi-finals. What do you think he will be looking at to achieve in this tournament, given how far he got last time? Rui was really pushing Nadal, it has to be said, in that match. Do you think he can go in with the same level of ambition, or do you think he's still finding his feet?
I don't think he's going to make an impact here. I think last year was probably a level that I don't think I'd seen him play for a very long time. I think even though he did lose that first set against Nadal, a lot of Nadal fans were worried in that second set.
Yeah.
Because there is, we know that obviously Nadal was having to, you know, numb his foot to even play, so that he was definitely in a point where people didn't know from an injury perspective if he would be able to go very long, and that was a very long first set, and almost a tiebreak in the second set before that happened. So I think it will be kind of bittersweet coming back, knowing just how close he was to having an absolute epic semi-final and giving him the opportunity to try and make a final. I'm not saying he would have got through that, but I don't think based on his form, he's in the mental space for it, or his game is in the right place. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I think, as you said, I think it'll be a bittersweet experience coming back. I think, you know, this part of the draw, again, I think there's opportunities there, but it's going to be, I think it's going to be tough. But I think he knows that his level of tennis is not where it needs to be. And maybe, you know, his Grand Slam pedigree from the past can really kind of help him find, you know, a vein of form that he hasn't been able, I think, to discover in the kind of regular tour events. So, yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, before we get on to our predictions, one other player I just want to call out, Jack Draper. Britain's Jack Draper is unseeded in this quarter. He has Echeverry in the
first round.
I mean,
it's a very tough section there. Dimonar, Ivashkas can play very well.
But Jack Draper, he just came back from injury this week. I think he lost to Baez in three in the quarterfinals.
Serendolo.
Do you think he's a potential dark horse? I mean, I could see him. I'm not gonna lie. I think he could cause a little bit of a surprise here.
I think Jack Draper over five sets, I still have question marks. We saw fantastic results last year at the US Open. It does take a big toll on his body, and we do know he's just coming back from injury. So for me personally, I think I can see him taking a couple of rounds. I think a Koric would probably be a step too far for him, given the fact he hasn't had that much time on the dirt coming into this. And we know he's not necessarily a two-week, five-set kind of body
at the moment. Yeah.
But in the future, absolutely. I think he's okay. An unbelievable
right,
player.
I'll stop the Jack Draper bandwagon there then.
if he'll go on to win this,
yeah,
now.
Exactly.
This is how predictions work, Joel. This is how it works.
Right, let's do some predictions. We've got we've got Kim's predictions as well. To be honest, we didn't really need Kim's predictions because they are the same as mine, pretty much. I just want to say
that
we now.
We have a different winner
but
each,
I think
which
that's
doesn't
the
always happen.
That is the interesting thing. I mean,
it's all to play for.
Chris, who are you going then for your predictions?
So, quarterfinal number one, I've gone for Alcaraz, Tsitsipas. I then have gone for Djokovic and Khachanov. I think he'll win the battle of the Russians. I've gone for a Scandinavian third quarter of Rune versus Rud. And then quarter four, I've unsurprisingly gone for Sinner Medvedev.
Okay.
What about you?
I have gone quite similar to Kim as well. So me and Kim have got Alcaraz, Tsitsipas, Djokovic, Rublev, and Rune Struff in our...
Did you work on this together, you two?
we've just
well,
so
I know
you've
been on longer, but come
we are
on.
Just so in sync. After 342 episodes, we just know each other and know what we're thinking. However, there was a bit of a brain divergence on quarter four because Kim, like you, has gone Sinner Medvedev. I've gone Sinner Chorich.
Joel, after all of your talk about Medvedev putting together the clay court season, you've now turned your back on your own
words. This is not
words.
Just like I want to be different and be out there and I've got ideas, but I genuinely think Chorich could be a player who just has a moment like Marin Cilic had against Medvedev last year, where he goes on one, for a match. And I'm backing Chorich.
It's not your worst prediction, I'll say, but I'm looking forward to see how far you think Chorich will go in this draw as we get to the semi-finals. Would you like to let me know where he gets to?
Okay, we'll see. So, yeah, I've got Sinner Chorich in quarter four. And then I've got Alcaraz, Djokovic and Rune Sinner as my semi-finals. Mm-hmm.
So he's only inspired for one match, is Chorich.
Exactly. Well, you know how hard it is to back up
it's
big
hard.
Victories. So that's what I've got in my semis. And Kim has gone the same, but has got Rune Medvedev in her bottom semi.
So I think I've actually... Now this is where we pass the baton over. And now I am in sync with Kim, because we may not have had all the same quarterfinalists, but I've also gone Alcaraz, Djokovic and Rune Medvedev. So it's us versus you, Joel.
Oof. And now it's like, I don't know. And then as all our brains have come together, put Kim out of the picture. Alcaraz, Rune, we have both got as our French
We've
Open.
We've been talking about them the entire way through the clay season. Yeah.
We have got them as our French Open 2023 men's finalists. Kim has got Djokovic, Medvedev. So yeah, we are backing Carlos Alcaraz in the duel against Novak Djokovic if it happens in the semi-final. But interestingly, I've gone Alcaraz as champion and you've gone Rune.
I've gone for Holger, but I mean, I would have thought, based on what you've talked about previously, that we'd be looking at a Holger a Medvedev final. So I think what I like is that, you know, you're not sticking to your words.
I'm a wild card.
You're a wild card. And it's maybe we both are, because maybe it is a foregone conclusion. And like most slams that Djokovic plays, he will win it. So if I was a betting man, I still think Kim's probably got the edge on this one.
Yeah, I mean, Kim has been the only one of us to say Djokovic as champion. And that would put him at the top with Grand Slams won. He's obviously tied with Nadal at the moment. But yeah, I don't know. I just really hope, actually, we just get that Alcaraz-Djokovic semi, because it's been talked about for so long and it would be really fitting, I feel, to have it in a Grand Slam best of five set format.
And then two young, big hopes of the game, the new big three, potentially two of the new big three in the final. That would be the dream tournament as far as I'm concerned.
Right. We're going to take a quick break now, but join us in the second half where we're going to be taking a look at the women's draw as well as revealing our collector set player picks. So do not go anywhere.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to the Tennis Weekly podcast, sponsored by DownloadTennis.com. And now we're going to move on to the women's draw, Chris. Before we get onto that, I just want to have a quick word on British tennis. British female players not having the best time of it at the moment. There are going to be no British females in the main draw. First time since 2009. That has happened at a Grand Slam. Very quickly, what are your words kind of on this? Because there were quite a few in qualifying, and the second round of qualifying was almost just like a bloodbath, wasn't it, for British hope. This to me doesn't feel great, particularly when we're going into the British grass court season in Wimbledon. You just know that the British press are going to be making a point of this.
Yeah, we don't have a headline player on the women's side. And when you take away Raducanu, you really do notice there is such a big sort of void.
Chasm.
Of players who... It really is. And I think I've always had a bit of a bugbear when it comes to some of the British players who aren't willing to spend life on the tour as much as they should. There are lots of tournaments that they could enter, they don't enter. And there isn't the focus of getting the ranking up in the same way. And they don't always apply the same level of enthusiasm and the same level of kind of their game when it comes to life on tour versus life in a team competition. So I do really like the fact that Katie Bolt has been over in Asia at the ITF events, picking up ranking points so that she can get herself into a situation where she can qualify for Wimbledon by right. So we do have some upward trajectories. Obviously, Jodie Burridge probably would have got acceptance because there's been a lot of withdrawals. She's ranked about in the top 110. So there's a lot of people in a similar spot, but it is a pretty sad state of affairs that for the first time since 2009, and with the legacy of kind of some of the players we've had, that we're in a situation where there's no British representation.
And it's also sad that Paola Badosa is not going to be there.
Can't catch a break, can she?
No, I know. She just feel like she was picking up ahead of steam. And then, yeah, she's announced today on social media she is out with a stress fracture to her back. So, get well soon, Paola. But
she would have been your pick, because you were picking her for everything.
I know. Don't worry. One of my other sort of regular picks, Kudermetova, is still firmly
she's your banker,
firmly in my banker. I mean, we're talking about Kudermetova, we're talking about quarter one, because that is where she is along with Iga Świątek. Iga Świątek, she pulled out of her match with Rybakina in Rome. I still feel like it's all very positive and optimistic about Świątek's chances with the French Open. I mean, Chris, since that happened, has the gap between her as favourite with the chasing pack, has that shortened for you, or is it still kind of like this is Iga Świątek's to lose?
All depends on her fitness. I think she didn't say she was too concerned. She made it quite clear that she was going to be in Paris. She booked that flight. She was very chirpy at the draw ceremony, but we've also seen a very chirpy Krejčíková before she had to pull out of her first round.
Is it the Rafa mentality of show no weakness to your competitors?
Yeah, I think it might be. I do think she did seem quite carefree, though. So I do think it's okay. And part of the reason why I have got some question marks is because you just don't know how serious it is. Because I think whatever happens, you'd want to communicate, as you say, that you're going to be there, and that you're no questions about your participation. But she's got some stern tests, you know, in her section of the draw. There are some tricky players in the form of like Azarenka's there, Andreescu's in that same part of the draw, Krejčíková, who's had the better of her a few times, and a former champion here. So I think it's not an easy draw, but we've seen her come through tough draws before, like at the US Open, and then start to play her best tennis. But it might be a bit of a case like Djokovic, where you have to manage the injury as the tournament progresses.
Yeah, as you said, there are some really stern tests there. I mean, it's amazing to have Azarenka, Andreescu, round one, Grand Slam champion, Grand Slam champion. That is probably one of the pick of the ties on either side of the draws.
It's a nightmare draw from them both. You've got to feel like Bianca coming back from her injury, Azarenka hasn't had the best clay season. That does scream it could go long. Yeah. I think it's going to have some edgy moments. But I think that will be a real blockbuster round one, two Grand Slam champions drawn together. There's a few other very interesting matches there.
Are you going to talk about Kai Kanepi being unseeded and in a Grand Slam?
Dangerous floater.
Blah, blah, blah. We've heard it all before, Chris.
The world's most dangerous floater, I guess I can say, in all Grand Slam draws. The last thing you want to see, especially if you're a big hitter like Madison Keys, because they can both soak up a speedy ball. Yep. They really can. And I think that would be a bit of fun to watch. I'm not sure it'll be the most pretty tennis at times. But Coco Gauff, that's where my real question is. Last year's finalist, just had a bit of a mixed bag of a clay season.
I've almost forgot that happened, actually. And yeah, I'm curious to see how she gets on, all because Kalinina could be a round three opponent for her. And Kalinina obviously got to the final in Rome. Yes, she had to retire. So I'm hoping that was more out of just being knackered from the amount of minutes she spent on court in Rome. But again, that could be a bit of a test if that does happen in the third round.
Yeah, that definitely would be a test. I think what's good is that going into the French, it seems like there's been some decisions from her camp about how her game should be working. I mean, 7 weeks ago, she parted with her coach, Diego Moyano, who cited the reason for kind of personal reasons. And so since then, she has kind of seen some slightly improved results, but she's also had some mixed bag there. So I think she is practicing better and she's trying to be more aggressive, because that is where we've seen the problem, when she doesn't hit through that forehand. So I think she knows what it takes on a big stage. And I think the change in her coaching dynamic, I think, will start to make sense, because you don't get those results immediately when you change your coach, unless it's Dmitry Turzanov on indoor courts, in which case you're going to be at the end of season finals.
Well, of course, of course.
I can see her playing her way into form, and I wouldn't be surprised if she did end up making a quarterfinal. I think I'd love to see that. But I do think that if Iga makes it there, then that would be a little bit of a foregone conclusion in my mind, a bit like last year's French final.
And moving on to the second quarter, Elena Rybakina headlines this as the fourth seed. Chris, I'm not going to lie, I'm just glad she is the fourth seed, so we haven't got a potential Swiatek Rybakina quarter. Like, I feel like we've had it so
She'll
many.
She'll be on a show court as well. Finally, she gets a show court, not the car park.
Exactly. I mean, Ons Jabeur as well is in this. You know, former, you know, recent Wimbledon finalist. Where are you looking at on in this quarter? Because for me, Ons Jabeur, I think, is a player that could go out, could be one of the shocks that goes out earlier on in the competition. I'm not going to lie.
Really? I think this is it's hard to gauge the form this year, because last year we were tipping her maybe for the title, and she obviously went out in the first round to someone who then put together a rather impressive semi-final show in Australia. Your favourite, Magda Linette. And I think the pressure's not on her, and I think that's something, when the pressure is on, she can buckle a little bit. I think we saw that in the Wimbledon final last year. It was on her racket at times, and then Rybakina really upped her game in that second and third set. So she's an unknown quantity, and I think that's something also when it comes to Rybakina at the French Open on clay. We haven't seen her play kind of that much there, or have that many deep runs there. So this whole section, I think, does lend itself to the people who were able to play well in Paris this year. I think I wouldn't look too much at the form book, because players like, you know, Petra Kvitova had barely any clay form, and then she came in the October French Open, reached the semi-finals, and she's barely played on clay this year. So this is wide open, and I think it's all about who is playing well in Paris on the day, and we're back in showing the consistency, so that's probably where I'm looking in this section.
I do think Haddad Meyer might be an interesting proposition.
You love Haddad Meyer.
Yeah, I do, I know. My heart goes out for her still after that defeat through to Kalinina in Rome.
You're not over that.
No, I'm
You're
not. I think she's a great competitor, and I think she... Yeah, if she can put some momentum together, I think she'll take some stopping. So, yeah, we'll wait and see. But certainly I'm...
What, not Sara Cerebres-Tormo? Those two, they could meet here?
Yeah, potentially. But no, I'm still with you. I think Rybakina, what we've seen so far, she's certainly, I think, going to... Yeah, looks like she's set for a decent run at the French Open.
It's nice to see Annette Kontaveit in the draw.
Yes.
As she continues her return to form, I think that is obviously something that... she's talked about some of the injury issues that she's had, the fact she has to manage the pain, it will never fully go away, but it is good to see that she's able to be back on court and competing, because she's had a real rough time since the US Open.
Yeah, I totally agree. And moving on to the bottom half of the draw, Maria Sakkari, Jessie Pegula,
French Open semi-finalist 2023, surely.
Is that losing French Open semi-finalist 2023?
I mean, I think that depends what you put. Yeah, well, but we'll, I can't see her going further.
I mean, Sakkari arguably could go out in round one. She's got Karolina Muchova which is not an easy, that is not an easy opener, is it?
I better adjust my predictions because I don't think I'd read that one right. But I think that's going to be a tough one.
I would not be shocked if Zachary goes out there.
I wouldn't be shocked either.
But I also have to just stress my predictions don't say that. I'm also interested in to see in how Belinda Bencic gets on because she's always such a consistent performer at Grand Slams.
She's had a lot of time out.
We've not seen her on a tennis court really that much recently. So I think she's a little bit of an unknown quantity. Jessie Pegula, as consistent as always, she's not actually reached a French Open semi-final. Do you think there's a chance she could do it here?
Definitely could be a chance. I think it depends on the draw. I'm not sure she's had the best clay season coming in.
Danielle Collins, round one. Now, that's a matchup I'd love to see, I feel like, on an American hard court. French Open clay, I feel like it's a little bit of a different story.
Yes, I think it is. I think unfortunately, they did play on a US hard court this year, and Pegula did get that win in Miami, and it was 6-1, 7-6, 7-love in that tiebreak. So I'm not sure on clay that's going to be much better than that, and Danielle doesn't always have the best form there. It is an exciting one, obviously, an Australian Open finalist versus, you know, the number three seed. I do think Pegula's going to get through that, and I think Mertens is a great draw as well.
To get to round three.
That's a really good draw. I was surprised that she was seeded, and then Samsonova hasn't put it together particularly, so I can't see her going up before the quarterfinals. So actually, why not a semi-final would be my question there. But Camilla Giorgi, another famously dangerous floater, who, if we cast our mind back, she beat this year's Australian Open champion, absolutely wiped the floor with her after
Sabalenka,
the first set.
Yeah,
4-6, 6-1, 6-11 in that one. So on her day, she can beat anyone. So I do think there are so many question marks about form and ifs and buts, whereas previously I think we've been a bit more concrete in some of these suggestions, whereas we just don't know who was really got the form coming into this.
But you are excited for, I've noticed on our script, you have penciled in Sara Errani versus Jill Teichmann as one of your picks for round one. Now, please, can you please enlighten me? What's so compelling for you about that matchup?
Firstly, it is a masterclass in serving. Sara Errani, one of the tour's greatest servers ever to play the game. Former French Open finalist, Sara Errani. I think we've been a little bit harsh on her at times.
We have, to be fair.
But she's still plugging away on the court, still getting the results and still getting direct entry to a slam, which is not something that the Brits can be saying right
now.
So
very true.
I always think it's nice, you know, in a bit of a Fabio Fognini style, Sara Errani's still out there. And with Trevisan having some injury concerns and pulling out of Rabat, maybe she'll be the person flying the flag, her and Camilla Giorgi. So will I be watching that match? Obviously. Anything that would be played on the ITF tour, I'll be watching, especially if it's at a slam.
Well, I mean, you talk about Martina Trevisan. I mean, she is in the bottom quarter. She's got a very interesting round one matchup against Elina Svitolina, who's having a very good week this week into the semi-finals. I forget which tournament she's in, but yeah, she's put in a good...
She's in Strasbourg.
Right. So yeah, she's having a very, very good week. I mean, Aryna Sabalenka is the second seed. She's the Australian Open champion. Do you see Sabalenka picking up successive Grand Slams? Or do you think that's a stretch too far on a clay court?
It's a really hard one because she hasn't had the best form at the French. And obviously, Sofia Kenin kind of...
I'm putting that down
quite
to...
well against her.
I think she was just knackered. I mean, given what we saw from Kenin in French Open qualifying, I'm almost like...
Maybe she was knackered. But I understand that being a blip, but I also just think it's a different way coming into the tournament, coming off a loss against someone ranked outside the top 100, even if they have won a slam before. She's got a pretty good draw, but Marta Kostyuk is a hard first round.
Agreed.
But if she can get through that one, I do think that she will kind of have a pretty serene course to the semi-finals, potentially. I do think it's a pretty good draw.
So you're not thinking about... Because Yelena Ostapenko is in this quarter, and you know me, I love a bit of Yelena Ostapenko. How do you see her chances? Because I think she's being talked about We know obviously her, you know, her mental game leaves quite a bit to be desired, but the form that she has shown and the draw that Yelena Ostapenko has been given, particularly with Caroline Garcia, who I don't necessarily think has had the best build up to the French Open. Do you see Ostapenko as a potential dark horse in this quarter?
It's almost like you've seen my predictions, Joel. I went there. I'm not sure you did, but you might have. We can see later. But I think it's a great opportunity for her. It's probably the best form, the best position she's been in with a decent draw to make an impact at a slam since she won the French. So all eyes on her getting kind of Kasatkina and Garcia. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better a couple of seeds, really, that could get you kind of into the latter week, because I really think Garcia is an incredible player. I just can't see her going anywhere in this draw, because add in the French pressure, her lack of form, and some of the comments she said about the fact that she's not enjoying herself on court, I have deep concerns about how she'll perform here and whether this will be a positive experience for her. And I can't see her having the biggest impact. I do think, though, in this section, we've got former French Open finalist Vondrousova.
I was thinking that. I was looking at that.
Former French Open finalist Sloane Stephens. And so this is another area of dangerous floaters here. And I think maybe someone from outside the seeds might end up getting themselves a good run.
Yeah, I agree. I was looking at Vondrousova, who has had great... Well, for, as you said, former French Open finalist. I think... I just don't understand. I mean, I get, yeah, she's quite a little bit injury prone, but yeah, she's a great player on her day that can put up a really formidable task. And who knows, maybe could face Ostapenko in round three. That would be an intriguing one to see if that happens. But we're going to do some predictions now. Again, I have got...
Here we go.
I have got Kim's predictions. And interestingly, the champions, you know, we were talking earlier about Świątek as the favourite. Me and you, Chris, we'll get onto it, but we may not necessarily have gone there.
This was one of the hardest ones I've done, because if, buts, maybes, I still don't know if Rybakina can play on clay, because no one played against her in Rome. So that's my big question. Everyone dropped out of those matches. So it's going to be hard. Sabalenka, we don't know. Iga, her form is in question. So
who have you got in your quarters?
I'm already backing out, but I've gone for Krejcikova.
Ooh.
Having a win over Iga because of the injury concerns I have. I've got Kalinina making a quarterfinal.
Can see that.
Then I've got Rybakina, Donna Vekic. I think Vekic is going to make another quarterfinal of a slam. I've gone for Sakkari and Pegula. And then I've gone for Ostapenko and Sabalenka. So a couple of curveballs, but not too many. And then Kim in the quarterfinals, I can see. Has gone completely different from myself. Has gone for Świątek versus Keys. Not sure where she got Keys from, or if Keys has been playing much on the clay. We've got Rybakina Vekic, we've got Sakkari Pegula, and Ostapenko Sabalenka. So not far off.
Yeah, it's and that, I mean, that's very, very close to me. I've got Świątek Kudermetova, but yeah, I feel like
of course you do.
Kudermetova is always to me like the
that'll be a one in a love,
banker,
or one in one
banker QF, like like a little bit of an elevated Elise Mertens, I think, for me in Grand Slams. But yeah, I've got Świątek.
What a comparison.
Kudermetova. Vekic as well, I think, doing quite well. And very similar. I mean, my semis are Świątek, Rybakina, Sakkari, Sabalenka, with my final Rybakina, Sabalenka, with my champion Rybakina. I think she's just going to go all the way, and I think she's going to have that. They're going to have a complete match following on from Rome in that semi-final. And I'm backing Rybakina to go all the way and defeat Sabalenka, who she faced in the Australian Open final.
So she will get her
some revenge.
Well,
yeah.
I can tell you someone who doesn't agree with you is Kim, who in her semi-finals has Świątek, Rybakina, Sakkari, Sabalenka, with a Świątek, Sabalenka final. So that's the difference. She thinks that Świątek will make it through, with Iga picking up her third French Open title. I have to say, and I'm very concerned now, because I've got the same winner as you, which normally means it's game over. But in my semi-final, I've got Krejcikova back in her, and I've got
Krejcikova in a semi-final.
I don't,
wow.
I don't know how I've got this, but through a process of elimination, I got Pegula Ostapenko. And then I thought, you know what? For the fans, let's have the grudge match. Rybakina Ostapenko in the final. And I think Rybakina will still get it. And hopefully there'll be less expletives in this one.
No, but, I want more. Hey, I want more expletives.
We're all there for the handshake. If there is, I mean, in a Grand Slam final, you've got to shake the hand, surely, and then say something nice about them with the microphone afterwards. So I'd pay money to see that.
Well, we'll wait and see. But yeah, very interesting, because I think genuinely maybe a few weeks ago, we would probably all had Iga Świątek as our champion. But yeah, times...
I discounted Rybakina completely in Rome. I said, I'm not looking at her. And then she won it. And now she's my pick for the French.
I think Rome, just generally with Medvedev and Rybakina, it's just like, it's just completely thrown everything
It's thrown us, hasn't it?
Right. That's some of our predictions. We're now going to move on to what is a very big occasion. It's collector set. It's French Open 2023 collector set. For listeners who have not done collector set before, this is our Grand Slam game where we announce six players and you tell us what round you think they will get to or if they will become champion. And the person with the most correct picks will win a very coveted Tennis Weekly mug.
A Tennis Weekly mug at stake.
It's exciting.
This is big.
It is big.
This is exciting.
Is to be honest, I just want to beat you and Kim. So,
well, I forgot about the Slam Spoons of Shame.
Oh, of course.
They need to be dished out again. I mean,
I think I was pretty shocking for Australia. I think I was the worst.
The current holder of the Slam Spoon of Shame.
Right.
So this is... For us, we're not playing to win the mug. We're playing not to be shamed.
So,
who do we have for the picks?
Right. So, let's share the duties. But we did, for the first time in our history, put out a collector set pick on social media, which I'm going to let you talk about that one. We also had a collector set pick from one of our crowd funders, Emily, and I'm going to start with that one because that is one of our male picks. So. Little bit of a drum roll. Our three picks for men for this year's collector set are Daniil Medvedev, Holger Rune, which is Emily's pick, and Cam Norrie.
That's a good mix, Joel.
And who have we got on the female side?
Well, I'll start with our Twitter collector set pick, which was tennis Twitter's favourite, Yelena Ostapenko. Never in doubt. We have last year's finalist, Coco Gauff. And we have Elena Rybakina.
Oh, so much.
Some big names.
So much uncertainty, I feel, with Ostapenko and Gauff. They could go out in round one, but they could also get to the final. You just don't know.
I think last time, the Australian Open, everyone didn't do very well. So we've had the worst case. This is when Tennis Weekly listeners and ourselves are competing for six. I'd love someone to get six this time,
Joel. We've been so close. We have been very, very close to someone getting all six. But yes, what we're asking our listeners to do then, I'm just going to say the picks again. So Medvedev, Rune, Norrie, Rybakina, Ostapenko and Coco Gauff. So tell us on social media or email us where you think in the competition, what round you think those players are going to get to. And if you think they're going to get to the final, let us know if you think they're going to be a finalist or if they're going to win for your chance to win a Tennis Weekly mug. Let us know your answers by Sunday morning UK time before the first ball is hit. So yeah, get your predictions in. We are going to be announcing our predictions in our round one, round by round catch up, which will be our
next
pod.
Do we have to?
Yes,
can't we keep it secret?
Tradition. It is tradition.
It's tradition. Okay.
I think we're going to be putting them out on our socials as well, so all of our listeners can have a good giggle at that, no doubt. But yeah, get your collector set player picks in, and we're going to leave it there. We've looked back on the draws. We've given our predictions.
The stage is set.
Really excited. I mean, it starts on Sunday as well. So got another another day on the weekend. It's a bank holiday for us in the UK. So it's just a great opportunity to start watching full day of tennis, really.
It is. And I'll be in Paris next week as well. So hopefully I'll be able to pick up a few gems whilst I'm there, get some good matches in. And if you are there, let us know and we can say hello when we're there.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you get up to at the French Open. Listeners, I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode of the Tennis Weekly podcast. Remember to subscribe to us to stay up to date on all the action to come from Roland Garros. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcasting platforms out there. And if you like what you're hearing, then make sure to leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify.
You can also follow us on social media or email the show. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and now TikTok at Tennis Weekly Pod. You can email the show, tennisweeklypod@gmail.com, or check out our website, tennisweekly.co.uk.
And we will be back next Tuesday at Tennis Weekly HQ for our round by round catch up of the French Open. So I hope you can join us for that. But in the meantime, it's goodbye from Chris.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you again soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.